With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
A very warm welcome to Devdutt Patnaik, who's joining us on this a very last minute, but a very important invitation that I kind of reached out to him and said, you know, Hanuman's my favorite god, and I can find a lot of strength from him. And I thought that, you know, it's a great day today, Hanuman Jayanti, to have a conversation with him. It's always wonderful to talk to him about anything, any subject, and he can take any subject and go in several directions. So it's just a very, very unique and privilege and pleasure to talk to Devdutt Patnaik. Devdutt, very warm welcome.
Thank you.
So I think everything is working now. I think the audio is fine, and we're back on. It's all good. Let me just start by asking you, you know, what we're calling this session, Veer or Mahavir. Because I've read so much of your stuff, I know you like doing this. You like putting two words and you like kind of comparing it, and you're kind of like just breaking this whole thing apart. And it's a lovely style. So can I ask you, you know, Veer Mahavir, what is the difference, really?
You know, this in India you have Dev and Mahadev, Veer and Mahavir.
Right.
You know, there is these words, and the idea is, when we talk about someone who is Veer, we're talking about the brave person, and we're talking at a very material level. So a brave person at a physical realm, at a political realm, someone who fights your enemies outside, who attacks the soldier, the Veer Gati ko prapt karna, to fight, die on the battlefield.
Right.
But when you talk about Mahavir, and this word is used for a monk, so in Jain traditions it is Vardhamana Mahavir, and in Hindu traditions it refers to Hanuman.
Yes.
And Mahavir here refers to a more psychological level, the mental level, the spiritual level. So it's about the mind, the conquest of the mind. So he who conquers the material world is a Veer, and he who sort of faces and fights and conquers the psychological world, the mental world, is the Mahavir. So the thing about Hanuman is that he is not just a physically powerful being. He's also a psychologically powerful being. That is what makes him a very exciting. So when you see this murti, you have this image of this man holding, he is a monkey, and he has got a mountain in one hand, and he has got demons under his foot. It's a very powerful, awe-inspiring image. But you, at the same time, you're being told it's a metaphor for psychological power. For someone who is not afraid, who is not... So when we feel insecure, when we feel scared, which is really a psychological battle that we all face. It's not a... We are not physically terrorized. We are... Of course, right now we are being physically terrorized. But more than the physical terror is the psychological terror of what's going on, what will happen to my life, what will happen to my future. All that. And I think somewhere you get that strength. And that's what Hanuman sort of embodies. And so I find that word Mahavir and Mahavir very interesting. Why did Indian need to create Veer and then Mahavir? You have Veer stones. For example, across India, you have got these stones where they worship brave people, the great warrior who killed himself in battle. You find a lot of, if you go to the Chhatrapati Shivaji Vastu Sangrahalaya, the museum in Bombay, you will find these beautiful stones. But they are considered to be ordinary. But extraordinary is Hanuman, because we are talking now at a different level. You know, the same thing you find with Dev and Mahadev. Shiva is called Mahadev because he is a god who does, while the Devas satisfy your hunger, Mahadev is someone who has conquered hunger itself.
Right.
It's a play of words. It's a level at which you're talking about. It's a paradigm shift.
No, very fascinating. And you're saying that this, I mean, you don't find this in other cultures, but there's no sort of brave and very brave. I mean,
no, I'll give you an example. When you read Chinese mythology, one of the biggest Chinese mythology is this legend of the Monkey King. It's a very popular folktale novel, the world's oldest novel, really, written in the 14th, 15th century. It really begins in the Tang dynasty. It reaches its popular form in the 14th, 15th century, where there's a powerful monkey, a Taoist monk who is born from a mountain, and very much like Hanuman, he's very powerful, he's immortal, he is able to defeat the god of death, he's able to defeat the dragons, he goes to the heavens, and the gods are also scared of him. But it's a very physically overpowering god. There is nothing psychological about it. It is all about this massive force of nature, which is chaotic and needs to be controlled by the Buddhist monk. The Buddhist monk Huansang has to control him. But it's a very material way. And that's the unique thing about Indian culture. When you do a analysis of Western ideas, Indian ideas, and Chinese ideas, what stands out in India is this obsession with the mind. So yoga, the mind, indriyas, the sense organs. We have had an awareness of the psychological realm long before Europe gave importance to it during the age of Freud and Jung. If Freud and Jung didn't exist, the mind as an idea is not a big thing in the European society or in Chinese society. It's a very big thing in Indian society. That mind, this world of the mind. And therefore, Hanuman belongs to the world of the mind as much as he belongs to the world of matter.
Interesting. Which, you know, one of the things that sort of I wonder if it's true, but what I've kind of always recognized, and I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, is that when you see Hanuman in battle, whether it's through your illustrations or through the famous, Ramayana, or whether it is in all the pictures, and you know, there aren't that many different poses of Hanuman. He's normally just got these three or four that you kind of see around, unlike the other Indian gods. But even when he's in battle, even when he's whatever he's doing, he's got the same expression. You know, he seems to be always in complete control of his emotions, of his mind, of his, you know, that the BMI is fully seems aligned.
So this is an Indian way. See, this whole idea of showing this angry gods is a new phenomena which you find in lots of young people.
It's only angry Hanuman. I mean, I don't see anybody like it bothers me because I'm like, you know, how I have understood Hanuman and my feeling Hanuman.
It's not art. See,
it's not art. Yes.
Basically, DC Comics and Marvel Comics making their way in the manga, making their way into the young minds, and they want Indian gods to also be like manga, and they want them to be like Batman and Superman, angry and tortured and in the dark world and all that. And I know for the last 10 years, everybody in Bollywood, every producer you can think of has approached me because they want me to help them create a superhero like Hanuman. And I'm like, missing the point. It won't work. And they keep saying, why it won't work? And I keep saying, because the Western hero is trying to solve problems. Batman, Superman, he's trying to save the world. It's America's desire to be the savior complex. Hanuman is not trying to save anyone. He's Sankata Mochana. When there's a problem, he comes and solves it. But there is constantly an awareness where he's asking, then what is Hanuman getting in the picture? Why does Ram, who's God, want the help of Hanuman when he can do everything? And the conversation, therefore, is far more subtle. You're always aware of Leela, that they are constantly telling you something else. They are they're smiling. It's like, why are they fighting the battle, but they're not angry? Why is Durga not angry? Why is Shivji not angry? Because anger is a sign of helplessness. Hindu gods are not helpless. It's only politicians who make their gods helpless because sab khatre mein hai. But the really thing is the gods are never helpless. Ram is not. Sita also says that I can kill Ravan in a flick of my finger. Ram can kill. They can all do it. They're looking at this little Ravan, who is an egomaniac, he has got 10 heads, Vedic scholar, and they're wondering, you're so educated, you're so strong, you're so smart. What's wrong with you? Why are you behaving like an idiot? Mm. And that's the bewildered look in the gods' eyes. The gods are bewildered. That with all the wealth that you've got and the privilege you've got, why are you so insecure? Why are you trying to steal another man's wife? Why are you a king of a kingdom who is willing to kill his son lets his son die, lets his brother die, lets his kingdom burn, but will not let Sita go. It sounds so petty for someone who's a Vedic scholar, who has got 10 arms, 10 heads, educated, music, Shiv Bhakt. And you're like, what is wrong with you? Why are you not able to see this, that your job as a king is to govern this land, make people happy? Instead of you're making them fight a war which is not theirs. The Lanka people have nothing to do with the war. So the stupidity of Ravan is what bewilders the gods, and therefore they cannot be angry with him. It's like dealing with a petulant child. This is not understood when you're doing a manga comic, because the Greek gods don't follow this pattern. The idea of absolute wisdom manifesting itself as Ram, as Krishna, as Hanuman, this is a very Indian idea. This is avatarana. Avatarana means when the infinite takes the form of the finite. So it's like you, let's say you are with your child. When you're talking to your child, you talk at a level of the child. But you know that you're stronger than them. How would you do this? Avatarana is that. The ability to, that becomes something like Hanuman can become small and big. This is a metaphor. He can destroy you with a flick of his finger, but he'll come in front of you and behave like a little monkey. And the way he sort of teaches Bhima a lesson, he comes like an old monkey and says, oh, I can't move, I can't do this. But he can actually just move mountains. And that is what they're trying to communicate, that strength is assurance, is confidence. It's psychological, it's not physical.
But are you saying, but why are we only focusing on anger as sort of, I mean, like, you know, do, I mean, I feel like gods have felt, Indian gods have felt things. They may not have felt anger necessarily. I mean, I think, if not mistaken, Shivji famously felt anger when, you know, when Kama came in front of him and kind of, you know.
So you see, we try to understand, these are all journeys, like, you know, when you see the Buddhist idea, why do we get angry? So 2,500 years ago, he is asking, why do I feel pain? Why do I feel suffering? So psychology has played a very important role in Indian thought. Ram is asking, what is so terrible about giving up my kingdom? If somebody tells you to give up your property, what stops me? Because my entire identity is locked in on my identity, right? And therefore, what is anger? So then the anger comes. So Shivji, when you see the Shiv Puran, Shiva's story is someone who is indifferent. He doesn't care. He sits on a mountain. He smokes pot. He is not interested. And the goddess is trying to say that, you know, that you, to engage with the world, you have to connect with the world. And she's trying to spark emotions in his heart. And therefore, her death as Sati provokes Shiva to get angry. And he feels this intense emotion of loss and rage. And he says, oh, I don't like this emotion. This is terrible. I don't like it. And he again withdraws into his cave. And he goes into the mountain and he becomes cold, like a cold Himalaya. The Himalaya become a metaphor for someone who's completely withdrawn from the world. And then the goddess, Parvati, comes and says, you know, don't be scared of emotions. Come, participate. So these are metaphors where she's saying the mountain, which is as cold, made of stone, made of ice, she goes and melts the mountain so that the mountain becomes the river Ganga. And when the river Ganga flows on earth, it brings life back to the world. Right. You know, that is the meaning of Haridwar, unfortunately, in a very bad news today. But to Haridwar, where the Lord, even the Lord has to now engage with lesser beings.
Right.
So how does a more educated man deal with a less civilized man or less educated man? What should be the rules of engagement? Shiva, who says, I don't want these emotions, and the goddess who comes and says, no, you have to engage. So Ram is about engagement with the world. He's like, I don't care for this material world, but he has to be a king. Or look at the visual image. Look at visual, how visually they talk. They show Hanuman's picture is always holding a mountain and flying through the air. Like, here is a monkey who's flying through the air with a mountain in his hand. What a visual. Every child can see that image. Monkey flying, mountain in hand. And then I will take you and show you the image of Ravan. 10 pairs of hands, 10 heads, holding Mount Kailas. And Shivji is crushing him under it. And with his big toe and pushing him down and saying, here is this great man with 10 heads, 20 arms, trying to pick up Mount Kailas, and he's being crushed down. And there is Hanuman, the monkey, flying in the air with the mountain in his hand. What is the difference? Ravana works for himself. He's obsessed with himself. He's a narcissist. And there is Hanuman, who is like, I don't want anything. I mean, I'm okay being the monkey. I'm okay being in the jungle. I will eat mango. Both speak Sanskrit.
Yeah.
Hanuman's introduction, and Hanuman Jayanti, by the way, marks not necessarily the birth of Hanuman, but the time when Hanuman meets Ram for the first time and speaks in Sanskrit and introduces himself using a very powerful, he speaks Sanskrit and everybody's looking in the jungle, and this jungle man from the jungle, Vanara, jo van ka nar hai, wo Sanskrit bol raha hai, with, and he's telling, okay, I'll help you out. Why will you help me? I'll help you. You need help, I'll help you. What do you want? Nothing. It's an absurd idea. How can someone help without wanting something? And compare and contrast that with a Ravan who has everything in the world and still wants another man's wife. You know, that's how Ramayana and Valmiki creates these structures to explain, look at this educated man, look at this Vedic scholar who can't let go of another man's wife, and look at this Vanara, who is educated by the sun, smart, capable, can conquer the whole world, wants nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is the Veer and who is the Mahavir?
Right. Very interesting. So tell me today, you know, when we are looking at a situation where we are seeing not just disease, we're seeing literally death. I mean, you know, you're seeing people just kind of, you know, not very far degree of separation. If you start looking around, people have actually really suffered with the virus. And something which is completely an externality. Nothing's in our control. When beyond the point of saying isolate, you know, it's very difficult to really be in our control. And, you know, it's very difficult to cure. You know, the whole thing, you have no control, really. Like the whole myth of control that we've always kind of spoken about, right? Like the control is a myth in itself, but it's really kind of manifesting out, you know, it's really showing that truth is kind of really showing right now. Is there one lesson that Hanuman can kind of give us, you know, in this time?
I think generosity. You are seeing the lack of generosity. That is the one thing. At one level, we have control over generosity. We have absolute control over our generosity. But we are not willing to exercise our control over our generosity. I don't know if it's true or false, but some of the richest men in the country, in the world, have spoken about how they will not share patents with poor countries. They will not share vaccines. They will not share raw materials. They will not share wealth with each other. You can see it across the board. We don't have to take names. Across countries, across cultures, we are not seeing, we keep talking about Davos and international. I don't see generosity. Where is the generosity? Where is the forget about being prepared. Sometimes we are not prepared. Sometimes we're overconfident, blah, blah, blah. Ultimately, it's about generosity. And if you can't be generous, and Hanuman in a way represents generosity. He's going and his own tail gets burnt. He's traveling across, building mountains, enabling people left, right and center, logistics department, ye department, wo department, sab kuch kar rahe. But khud ko kuch nahi chahiye. He takes the pearls and he says, but I don't find Ram inside it. And what he means by Ram is the idea of the wisdom, the purpose of wisdom, because Ram is an idea. It's a, and he's basically that. I think the spirit of generosity is something that we have to ask ourselves. Where is, in this horrible situation, are we genuinely seeing dil khol ke generosity? You're seeing private people, crowdsourcing happening, people helping each other. You just go out there on the road and you see people. I went to the mega center in Bombay to get my vaccination done. Young boys and girls, I know, because I worked in the medical industry. I mean, you know, I'm a doctor, right? I'm training medicine. I know how difficult situations are. I know they've not eaten their lunch. I've gone at 2 o'clock and I know these boys have not eaten their lunch. These girls have not eaten their lunch. I was overwhelmed emotionally to see the complete dedication with which they were managing work. Now that's generosity. They're not saying clocking hours. I don't think bonuses, and they're going to be get rewarded. Appraisal mein unko like 30% increment milne wala hai. Kuch nahi milne wala inko. But they're doing it out there. And I think that is the spirit of Hanuman. I mean, that is Hanuman out there. You're seeing the ability to be generous. The only spiritual matrix which I measure is I see how generous a person is emotionally, intellectually, and financially. Or materially. And that is a good indicator to understand, you know, that whole idea is, you know, how much are you willing to give others? And, you know, there's this famous story of Hanuman, I keep saying, where he's talking to Valmiki, and they say that Hanuman had once written a Ramayana, and Valmiki said that, you know, Hanuman, after reading your Ramayana, which is so beautiful, nobody will read Valmiki Ramayana. And Hanuman then destroys his Valmiki. He completely destroys his own Ramayana, saying that, you know, you need your Ramayana more than I need my Ramayana, because you need your Ramayana so the world will remember you. I need my Ramayana only to remember Ram. I don't need the world to remember me. I don't want the world to remember me. You know, that's basically saying that I do work for its own pleasure. I don't want to be remembered for my work. And that's a very difficult place to be in. And I think that's what makes you a Mahavir. So we all want fame and glory and wealth. What does Hanuman seek? Because he has Riddhi. When you read the Hanuman Chalisa, which, you know, he is, they say, Ashta Siddhi, Navadhiti, Navanidhi. He has everything, but he's not interested. And that's a great place to be in, where you have all the wealth in the world, but you're willing to give it away. You have all the power in the world and you're willing to give it away. It's a confidence at a level which I have not seen. And I think that's what I think the scriptures are telling. They're creating a character who has all the wealth, but doesn't want it. All the power, doesn't want it. All the fame, doesn't want it. Not, doesn't dismiss it, knows its value, but is willing to share it with the world. And I think during these times, when we're going through tough times, generosity of spirit is a good measure of Mahavir index, I can call it.
Very interesting. You know, another trait of Hanuman, famous trait of him, is that he's a brahmachari and he doesn't have a family. Or he says, he doesn't aspire to have those attachments, and he's a single man. He's a single monkey, and he doesn't. And, you know, but more importantly, he's not aspiring to have anything that makes people do the things that you're saying they
Words, Anant, because you know what happens is we assume that single people are generous and nice people. So let's not go there. This idea that if you don't get married, you as a single person will be more nicer person than a married man is a lie. And that if somehow you retain your semen in your body, you somehow become a nicer person. This is absurd gobbledygook nonsense, right? It doesn't make physiological sense. It doesn't make psychological sense. These are metaphors. These are metaphors. Brahmacharya is a metaphor, where I am trying to communicate, it's a structural idea. So the structural idea is that where I am not, the world doesn't control me. I am in control of myself. So the indriyas, how do you explain it metaphorically? So the rishis, there's the rishi who is meditating, and then an apsara comes and dances in front of him. And then we say, oh my God, uska virya paat ho jata hai. And he basically loses control of himself. Now, this is not meaning having sex. I mean, yes, that's a sexual act, yes, but they're not using it in these crude, vulgar ways. It's a metaphor where you are enchanted by the world. The world controls you rather than you being in control of the world. So brahmacharya is not about retaining your sexual bodily fluids in your body or not marrying. It is about not letting the world control you, but by you being in charge in the world. And that's what it means. I mean, unfortunately, we take it literally. So it's like the Western people saying that, Devdutt, why do Hindus worship a monkey? And I have to sit with them and say, do you know the meaning of the word metaphor? Because you seem to be educated, but I have to explain to you what a metaphor is. There's a visual metaphor. In the same way, brahmacharya is a metaphor, not to be taken literally. Otherwise, then the Pope must be the nicest person on earth. But he is misogynist and homophobic. Let's be very clear. The Catholic Church is misogynist and homophobic. And they feel it's great because somehow they don't shed semen. I mean, oh, please. Let's not. So these stories are designed to explain. So there is this whole idea of brahmacharya and saying that, okay, I have retained, I'm not interested in the world, but should I still engage with the world? So Shivji doesn't want to engage with the world, but the goddess says you have to engage with the world. And this idea of engagement with the world without seeking to consume the world is brahmacharya. So Hanuman is solving problems of the world, but doesn't want anything from the world, is a very unique place to be in. It's somewhat, basically, as a businessman, you'll understand this. Imagine if the best people in the world worked for you and didn't ask you for a salary.
Yeah, Yeah.
That would be delightful, wouldn't it? But in many ways, that's Hanuman. He's doing it and he's making you feel. And Ram is like, what are you getting out of this?
Yeah.
You're doing all my work because sab seva tum to kar rahe ho, teen sab kaam kar rahe ho, mil kya raha hai tumko?
Yeah.
And he is participating in the world and he's solving. If he solves, if Hanuman comes into your life and solves all your problem, okay, what do you do with your life? If all your problems are solved, what do you do with your life? And that's an interesting question. If you have no problems in your life and somebody else is solving all your problems, what are you doing with your life? Are you a generous person? Are you a nicer person? Because someone has given you, you have been privileged to have a Hanuman in your life. Ram has a lot of burden now.
Yeah.
Because all his problems have been taken away. So yeah. now what do you do? And now comes the real tension. Because now that all the problems are taken away, now what do you do, Ram? What do you do with your time?
Yeah. But also he feels a sense of duty towards Hanuman now, right? I mean,
but Hanuman doesn't want anything. So what do you do with this person who doesn't want anything from you? And it's
the onus of that is on Ram now, right?
It's now on Ram, and that is the reverse relationship. Isliye pehle Hanuman, fir Bhagwan.
Yeah.
Remember, to get access to Ram, you have to enter the temple. But Hanuman temples are always outside.
Except the temple.
Always outside. So pehle Hanuman, fir Bhagwan, because this Hanuman is about service, helping people, but not seeking anything in return. And that is a big problem because now you are his rin. You are in his debt all the time. And he says, okay, pay it forward, which means you have to be generous. So I have taken away all your problems. So can you be generous? At least be generous? Yeah. And then that becomes not so easy.
No, fascinating. Okay, I have a follow-up, you know, and this is... A new father. I'm, you know, my son's 18 months old. And you know, it's really quite crazy how it really makes you, you know, just how you process life and think about things. It does change a little bit. You know, I felt it. And I'm not saying I've become more selfish or it's not that. In fact, if anything, it's the other way around. But, you know, you feel like you've got a lot more to lose in life than you did before you had this kid. You know, you just feel like there's a lot more that's kind of, you have to think a lot further with every step than you did, you know, just like literally, I feel like overnight that kind of changes. You start thinking a lot sort of further down the road with every small action, every small thing that you do. And so while you're talking about a very interesting, a poetic understanding of the word brahmachari, I'm still coming back to this, you know, today where we are literally like, if you get the oxygen, somebody else doesn't. Okay. You've got a family, they've got a family. You know, how generous, and I'm just asking, how generous really can you think you can be?
Look at Ramayana. Let's go back to the Ramayana. In Ram, Ram establishes Ram Rajya. Where is his wife and child? His wife is in the jungle. His children are in the jungle. So his children and his wife are not beneficiaries of the world he has created. Is he the beneficiary of the world he's creating? And the question we have to ask that, and that's a private and personal question, because I can be a single man and be a narcissist is a single man. That doesn't mean all brahmacharis, there are no narcissist brahmacharis.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why the word, we have to be very careful with this word, with, you know, the assumption that if I wear saffron robes and I'm not married, I'm a nicer human being and I'm slightly sitting on a higher pedestal than you. That's a wrong idea.
Yeah.
Hanuman always sits on the floor. And Ram is alone in the palace. He's taking care of an entire kingdom. And his wife is there. And it is basically shaming his people. Because all the people who had benefited from his great rule, they were gossiping about Sita. Why were they gossiping about Sita and her character? How does it matter to them? Why were you gossiping? Why was tabloid so important in Ram Rajya? And that's the question to ask, because if you have got all your problems solved, so Ram, like Hanuman, has solved all the problems of the people. So the least people can do is be generous. But instead of being generous, they are gossiping about the private life of the king and queen. What does it tell you about human society?
Hmm.
That's what Ram Rajya is making. The people of Ayodhya were gossiping about Sita. This line is a very important line because we are not asking why. Tumko kya jata hai? Why are you not being generous? This generous. You know, Ahalya is turned into stone by her husband. Ram turns her back into a life. He's being generous. He's like, I'll give you an example. When somebody once asked me, Devdutt, Sita was innocent and yet Ram threw her out. And I asked, if she was not innocent, you should throw her out.
That's like, a lovely, I've not thought of that. Yeah, it's a lovely.
Because we don't ask these questions. These scriptures were designed structurally to make us ask difficult questions. We don't have to live those experiences in life. God forbid, we don't have to live horrifying experiences. The stories give us a safe case study. It's like a management school mein case study hota hai. You are being told, if the wife is not, what is the word they will use? She was not innocent. Will you throw a person out? What does it say about you? Because all your problems are being solved by Hanuman, right? So right. The least you can do is be generous.
Yeah.
But you're not being generous. The people are not being generous. And that's the tragedy of the drama. How generous to be generous is a challenge. And it is something that you're seeing constantly in the Ramayana. That people struggle to be generous. Kaikai is not being generous. Bharat is being generous. He's like, no, I will not take this kingdom. That's why Bharat plays a very important role in the Ramayana, where he says, I don't want Ayodhya. And, you know, I'll give you another example. When Ram is leaving Ayodhya, people say that Kaikai is responsible. And he says, no, please don't blame her. This is karma ka khel. I will not blame anyone. This is what has had to happen. I have gone to the forest. Please don't blame her. Which is, again, generosity. When Sita is going to the forest, playwrights, and I have worked in a lot of serials on television, they make Sita cry. And I keep asking, why should Sita cry? Why can't she say the same dialogue that Ram made, saying that, you know, this is the way life is. I'm not going to blame him, be angry with him. He did what he had supposed to do. I wish he didn't do it. This is not the way to do it. Why would she break down? Because she's a woman. And she's Janak's daughter. She's a wise woman. She's an educated woman. Why would her personality be dependent on Ram? That if Ram throws her out, she'll be crushed. Of course, it's heartbreaking. Nobody wants to be treated the way you're being treated. But you don't break down. You survive in the forest. She's a single mother. She raises her two children on her own. And they become so strong that they defeat Ram's army. So she has, I see it, an independent woman functioning. She has no Hanuman to protect her. She has no, her sankat, she manages on her own. Hanuman is not helping her in her sankat. Hanuman is there to help Ram. Ram needs sankat mochan. Sita doesn't need sankat mochan. She doesn't pray to Hanuman. She's managing on her own. Now, this is autonomy at work. This is independence at work. So this is how Ramayana creates structures for you to think. Do you want Hanuman or do you want to be like Sita, a single mother taking care of her two children in the forest without anyone's support? That's interesting narratives. These are the narratives that Ramayana makes you think.
Very fascinating. I'll ask the last question because I know that we got offered a technical glitch and so we're running quite late and I know I'm taking a lot of time. So I'll ask one last, I want to explore one last piece with you. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, a morbid subject, but you know, we are all seeing situations now where people, you know, we know of people who've lost loved ones, and we're seeing, again, a lot of this sort of really playing out. It's a complex issue, but let's try to just kind of explain and understand now, you know, how do we come to terms with that kind of a loss? What does the Ramayana, what is Hanuman, what do these scriptures kind of teach us about dealing with, you know, that sort of loss? Maybe I'll provoke with another sort of thought is, you know, there are a lot of ancient cultures where, you know, there's a lot of emphasis placed on, you know, on your life after this one. And, you know, death isn't a full stop, really. How do we think about it here? How does that kind of thought process help us process, you know, losing a loved one?
See, a loved one, all loss is painful. And the thing is, the question we have to ask ourselves, and we have to allow that pain to come. It's okay to go through a breakdown. It's okay. It's okay to cry. It's okay to be going to depress. It's okay. It's okay to be depressed and miserable. But it is important to allow it to pass. And I think that's important, not to cling on to it. So it is like, you know, the floods happened in Bombay. Those days were horrible. Everything collapsed. And every time, I remember the few years after that, when the rains would come, I would get scared to step out of the house.
Yeah.
But then life moves on. Right? In the same way, there were bomb blasts in Bombay. You are staying, you know, you have experienced it right there.
Yeah.
And the horror of it happens, but life moves on. So, you know, kings will come and go, terrorists will come and go, life will come and go, property will come and go, wealth and fame will come and go. Nothing lasts forever. That's why the India's, our flag has a very beautiful symbol, the chakra.
Hmm.
The chakra means it is rotating, nothing going to last forever. So in the Jain tradition, it is Avasarpini and Utasarpini, the cycle of life. And the rate at which it changes, you have no control. We would, in the Ramayana, there is a story in the Uttar Ramayana where a Brahmin comes with his dead child in front of Ram and says, if you followed Dharma, I, the father, should die before, the son should die later. But my son has died before me, Dharma is not being upheld. Now, this is showing the irregularity of life even when Ram is king. You can't plan life. We can plan everything, but things don't work out. We can plan everything in the world. We can, you know, have all the risk assessments, and the geniuses of the world have failed, right? And this little virus has taught a lesson, has brought everyone to their knees. And I think still, does it mean we will become more generous people? And that is to be observed. That is to be observed, that despite so many calamities coming in, how many people allow themselves to be generous? Because dekho, sab to jana hi hai ek din. To tum deke jao na, nahi hoga. It is not going to be easy. And that is the battle we have to deal with. In our grief and pain, do we become more generous? Temporarily, you know, there's Smashana Vairagya, which is when you go to the crematorium, and we are seeing these images of crematoriums, they are very depressing. But what happens is people go into this Smashana Vairagya. We all feel life has no meaning, life has no meaning, and then it comes back. It goes away. That feeling goes away. The question is, can we use this sorrow to introspect on what prevents us from being generous? Because we are not going to take our wealth away with us. We are not going to take our fame away with us. We are not going to take our reputation away with us. Whatever we have, nothing we will take away from us. So what is stopping us from being Dani? Give little bit of generosity for the next generation, talent management in companies, preparing the next generation, leaders preparing the next, retiring. Retirement is generosity. We don't retire. Like banyan trees, we cling to power. Pappa gaddi nahi chhodenge. Every family business I go to, I hear the same story. And the same thing is in politicians. They're 1,000 years old and they're still not letting go of their gaddis. And you know, I don't have to name names. Just Google and see them. They're all frighteningly old and not letting go. And I think this calamity and this tragedy is moments to restore. What stops us from being so clingy like Duryodhan, like Ravan? We are not. And I think that's an important thing. I think pain will come. That's part of life. What is in our control is our generosity. And we have to focus on that little one word. I believe it's not about gratitude, which is a very self-indulgent word. I am grateful. Can you be generous? Because that's action-oriented. Mm. Gratitude is not action-oriented. It is self-indulgent. Let us focus on what can I do? And I think that is, with this pandemic, after a few months, vaccinations will happen. We will survive. Some will die. Some will live. Like a war has happened. World War I, we didn't experience. World War II, we have not experienced. The world bounced out of that. There's a Holocaust that happened in the last century. There were, this year, this century has begun with these horrors. We have got this COVID. It will go. We know that. But the question is, will we be nicer people? Or will we go back to being what we were before, is the question.
Fascinating. I think a great, great time and great place to end the conversation. Devak, as always, thank you so much. The book you're holding up is in my office, so I couldn't hold it up physically. So I'm glad you are. I highly recommend it. It's a wonderful telling, and I've read many types of Hanuman. I've read many tellings of Hanuman Chalisa. It's absolutely fabulous. Everything Devak writes is fabulous, but Hanuman Rings sort of has a strong relationship with me, and I think therefore I really enjoyed this book as well. You want anything you want to add about that book, Devdutt?
No, I'm okay. Buy it.
Thank you all so much. Thank you so much, Devdutt. Appreciate it. Thank you.